Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now, a status yellow low temperature and ice warning is in effect for the entire country until 11 o'clock this morning. Met Éireann says there will be widespread frost and ice, and also warned of potentially hazardous driving conditions. Temperatures are also forecast to fall significantly below freezing in the early part of next week, with overnight temperatures possibly as low as minus 10 degrees in places on Tuesday night. So what does this all mean for coping with the coming days? We're joined first by Deirdre Lowe, forecaster with Met Éireann. Deirdre, good morning to you.
Good morning.
We've got a warning in place right now, but what can we expect later in the weekend?
Well, really, we're going to see low pressure move up over the south of the country during Saturday. So later Saturday into Saturday night, we'll see rain, sleet and snow move up over the country. Initially, mainly falling as rain and sleet with snow on the higher ground. But then after dark and on Saturday night, snow at lower levels too. So some disruption likely, and the rain, sleet and snow only slowly clearing away into the Irish Sea during the course of Sunday. So some significant totals of snow are likely, particularly in the Midlands and in inland parts of Munster and South Leinster, where there, you know, there could be some significant disruption due to the snow. So some treacherous driving conditions as well, obviously.
Yeah, and from the point of view of people trying to plan the coming week, do we know at this stage what the status of the weather warning is at this stage for next week? With snow and sleet, are you talking at least yellow or orange?
We'll be issuing the warnings this morning. It's likely to be a yellow warning nationwide from 1800 Saturday until 1800 Sunday. Now, the rain, sleet and snow may not have reached the far north of the country, there are some caveats to the warning. It's still an evolving situation. And eastern parts and southern parts on Saturday will see the rain, see it falling as rain, because we have a breeze coming in off the east and a breeze coming in off the south. So initially these will fall as rain, but during Sunday it'll turn back to snow in eastern and southern parts too. And there also could be some heavy rain in the south and southwest of the country as well. And then next week it's going to be bright, but the Arctic air mass is going to return, bringing crisp winter sunshine. But Monday in particular, we'll see further sleet, hail, sleet and snow showers move down into the north and west of the country. And there'll still be accumulations of snow in many areas. It's going to take a while for it to melt.
All right. I suppose people will want to know on Monday whether or not the schools will be reopening. Do we have any clarity on this stage as to what the weather conditions will be like, or whether they'll meet the criteria for school closures?
Well, there will be further sleet and snow showers in the north and west on Monday, and there's likely to be covering of snow in many other parts of the country. But the east and south should have a lot of dry weather on Monday with plenty of sunshine, but there could be snow cover and icy stretches. And the nights will be very cold, especially over snow cover. That's when you find the coldest temperatures dip down to maybe minus 8, minus 9 degrees over snow cover.
Right. And we've heard even reports, or read people maybe reading reports this morning, about minus 10 degrees around Tuesday. Is that the best indication for when temperatures will be down that low?
Well, over snow cover, they could get down that low at any stage. So it depends where the snow cover is. But certainly the early days of next week are looking bitterly cold, especially at night, and there will be low temperature warnings issued at that stage.
Right. Any idea when people might get respite from the low temperatures?
Currently, it looks like Friday and Saturday of next week are slightly less cold, but I think it's going to be a slow recovery.
Okay. All right. We're also joined by Eivín Toomey, Communications Officer for the Road Safety Authority. Eivín, you're telling motorists to get prepared today and get ahead of the curve on the bad weather. So what are you advising?
Absolutely. Hi, Colm. We're asking drivers really to remember that the only contact they have with the road surface is their tyres, to make sure that they're up to the task of driving in icy and snowy conditions. Check the tyres, check your spare wheel, check your your windshield washer system, have a de-icer, have a screen scraper. So really just get as prepared as possible for the coming conditions.
And check the tyres for what? What should people be looking out for and how might they check their tyres?
Well, I suppose typically we generally have summer tyres. We all drive on, most of us drive on summer tyres. So we're not, our tyres aren't as hugely equipped as they would be, let's say, in Germany, where they have winter tyres for driving in poor and icy and snowy conditions. So look, I suppose one of the things is just making sure that the tread depth hasn't fallen below the 3 millimetres. So just to check that, you can take it in somewhere locally and get it checked, that they're inflated to the correct tyre pressure as well, so that they're, if there is a lack of grip, that they can, that you have the best possible conditions there on your tyres for that.
Okay, and if people want to check their tyre depth and they don't know what pressure they should be, if you check inside the driver's door, you'll normally find what the tyre pressure should be. And if you have to get into the car over the weekend, what advice do you have for actually driving in the conditions, you know, in terms of navigating through the gears or precautions you might take in icy weather?
Yeah, I suppose, again, it's preparation. Just make sure before you set off that you're clearing your windows, removing any snow accumulations from the car, checking that the lights are clear and everything and working order, that you have the dimmer inside of your windows thoroughly as well. So using dipped headlights if visibility is poor. Make sure your headlights and your taillights are working. Maneuver gently, slow down, leave extra distance between yourself and the vehicle in front, so you're having as much room for error as you possibly can. Avoid harsh braking, harsh steering, acceleration. Use the highest gear possible to avoid a wheel spin, although select a lower gear when travelling downhill, especially through bends as well. So when you slow down, try to use your brakes so that the brake lights warn the drivers behind you that you're slowing down. Be cautious of black ice as well in sheltered and shaded areas, so under trees, under bridges, adjacent to high walls. Just because you don't see the ice doesn't mean that it's not there, so it is a high risk to drivers as well. For pedestrians, we're asking them, you know, just to advise extreme caution and care, that, you know, many footpaths may not be treated. So wear appropriate footwear, shoes, boots, wear reflective clothing, high vis. And so just because even if there is a light dusting of snow, the ice can be under it. So just be really cautious with that as well. And cyclists as well, to just wear high vis. Take alternative safer transport if possible.
Oh yeah, I thought you read my mind. I was just going to ask you about cyclists, if there was any advice in particular for people who are taking to the roads on bikes in areas where there's snow clearance and the like. Some of the snow or slush might end up on a cycle path beside the road. So just be conscious, I suppose, of extra hazards there, is it?
Absolutely. Try to ride where other vehicles have passed, where you know that there's less chance of ice. Again, you know, for cyclists, their only contact with the road is through their tyre. So especially with cyclists, you know, it's a narrow tyre. So if they need to maybe lower the tyre pressure as well to increase the surface area. So lower speeds, especially on descents, and just be really cautious.
Okay, and kit in the car. I mean, if people have to be on the move during some of the more inclement weather, if there's snow or sleet out, is there any things that absolutely should be in the car from the point of view of the Road Safety Authority?
Yeah, high-vis for sure. Just make sure that you have high-vis there, that you have your triangle, your phone battery is charged. You have a shovel would be great if you have the room to store it. If in case you get caught stuck, de-icer, torch, first aid kit, a blanket just in case you are stuck in the car, warm clothing. And just letting people know where you're travelling to, how long it's likely to take. And I suppose just staying informed, listen to advisories, try not to travel if you don't need to travel. And, you know, just everybody staying as safe as possible. If you are, I suppose, one of the things, if you are in a skid, try not to panic, try not to jam on the brakes. And a little steering goes a long way, so steer gently into a skid. So
what does that mean? If people do pull into a skid, is it try not to steer in the opposite direction to the skid? Just talk us through what that advice means.
Yeah. So steering gently into the skid. So if a car is sliding to the right, steer gently to the right. Easier said than done, but try not to panic and jamming on the brakes, because that will undoubtedly make things more difficult for you.
Okay.
So I suppose one of the things is hoping you're not in that position. So trying to stay as safe as you can, preparing and trying not to travel if you don't need to.
Okay, so slow down, avoid hard braking, stay in as high a gear as possible, low gears if you're going downhill, take it easy, make sure you're using the brakes rather than just easing off the accelerator, and stay off the roads if you don't have to be on them. Aiveen Toomey, thanks very much from the Road Safety Authority there. Seamus Boland, CEO of Irish Rural Link. Seamus, what's your message as we head into the weekend?
Well, our message in Irish Rural Link is, as always during the winter period, people do live alone, not just in rural areas, but all across the country, and isolation can be a problem. So, first of all, make sure communications are possible. Neighbours, people close by, make sure you know who's living near you, who might need help. And also the message to people who do live alone, make sure you know who you have to contact if you need help, because I think it's important that if something suddenly happens and you need to know what to do, just have somebody you can call very quickly and that they will know your situation. Other than that, just as you know, also for older people especially, don't be afraid to have the heat on at this time of the year, because we do have incidences over, and very few thankfully, but they do happen, where people actually die of the cold. So don't be afraid to put on the extra heat if you need it. And other than that, neighbours and everybody, be just vigilant, particularly for people living alone.
All right. People might be reluctant, Seamus. I suppose the recent general election saw plenty of people who are skilled in the random knock on the door to check in on people looking for the number one vote. Other people mightn't be as forthcoming when it comes to knocking on a neighbour's door to check in, or might think they're insulting somebody by asking them if they're going to need help during the cold weather. What would your advice be there in terms of how to approach that?
Yeah, well, first of all, people will always respond to people they know who is calling. In other words, if it's a neighbour, since COVID, we have got better at calling into each other and saying hello, because we kind of learned in a crash course during that period. Now, you know, there should be a habit, and this is why we put a call out at the beginning of every winter, to get to know your neighbour, see, do they need help? You can do that in an informal way so that they will expect a call. And I would argue, never be too worried if you're told to get lost. At least you've made the effort. You've made the effort, and so what? If they're alive, if they're healthy, they're well, and they're cross enough to give out to you, well, sure, that isn't that great. But the main thing is you create a habit, and we put this call out at the beginning of every winter, get to know people, let them know you're there if they need them, and make sure to have your number and all of that. But if you're worried, do knock at the door, and if you're not getting a response, well, you may have to take further action.
All right. Maybe a note through the letterbox at some point as well, so they have your contact details written down as well. Seamus, I suppose a lot of people would be in the habit maybe of dropping a text to somebody if it's just a kind of a casual message. Would there still be older people who are entirely reliant on landlines at this stage, for whom that might not be a good way to access them?
Not too many nowadays. I think many vast majority of the population, older especially, have the mobile phone, and the text is a great way to do it. But there are a few. There are a few who will not have who are not using the mobile, or who don't really know how to use it very well. Again, you know, if you have a habit of calling to people, you'll kind of know that already. But the main thing is, make contact however you can. But the text works very well. And, the landline, if you have the number, it works too. And usually that's answered quicker sometimes than the door.
Right. OK. And maybe if you don't get a response, find an excuse to knock in just to make sure everything's OK.
Yeah, make sure, because we have a good idea of people's habits. They go up the road certain times in the day, or they're out at certain times in the day, you know. But call when you think it's convenient, that you think they'll be there and up and about. But again, I my message also is to people who are living alone, be aware that, you know, in case you need help, have somebody's number nearby that you can call.
All right, a warm coat and a thick skin and knock into the neighbours. Thanks very much exactly. for that, Seamus. Martin Merrick of the Irish Farmers Journal, good morning to you.
Morning, Colin.
How are the farmers preparing for this cold snap? I suppose every farmer in different types of farming are different, but in the main, how do they prepare for the cold weather? How should they be preparing?
Yeah, look, Colin, it's going to be mainly livestock farmers that this is going to affect. Tillage farmers are kind of in their quiet period at the minute. So it's going to be mainly livestock farmers, as it could be a livestock welfare issue. Look, while a lot of the precipitation seems to be in the form of rain, we are going to see some accumulation of snow in some areas, particularly in the hill areas, where there are a lot of hillbury ewes overwintered. And the danger with this is that, as in the past, some sheep could be lost to snowdrifts. So where possible, you know, you'd be looking for farmers to move those ewes down onto lower ground. Any livestock that are out winter really should be given some supplementary feeding in the form of fodder and or concentrates, as they'll use up higher amounts of energy and more than we would to keep themselves warm. Any early lamb and lowland sheep farmers should look to house pregnant or recently lamb ewes for extra care and attention, and just any livestock that are still out in the fields, just to check water troughs that they aren't frozen over and any ice in them is broken. Okay, in general, Colin, animals and farmers prefer this colder, dry weather in comparison to the heavy rainfall.
Right. I suppose if the weather, you know, if it does get snowy in the course of next week, would you advise farmers who may not be in as much of the hole of the health as they were, maybe to try and draft in a bit of extra help if they're moving animals?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, Colin, the majority of animals are inside at the minute anyway. We say it'd be mainly just sheep that are still out on the land at this time. But yeah, look, we have an aging population when it comes to farmers as well. So as it was mentioned earlier, if you do need help, reach out to neighbours, reach out to friends. You know, they'd be more than happy to help any farmers in situations like that. And we talk an awful lot about livestock and the welfare issue with that. But farmers' own health and safety should be the main priority, you know. Keep yourself warm using multiple layers of clothing, you know, instead of two or three big thick layers of jackets. Keep your mobile phone charged with you and on you at all times in case you do have a slip or a fall or accident like that. Just keeping the yard safe as well, you know, plenty of lighting. If you can get some salt to clear the main traffic areas around the yard, that'd be great. Or alternatively, just use some, you know, sharp gravel or sand just to give that extra bit of grip as well.
Okay. All right, Martin, thanks very much for that. We're going to move to Paul Crone, Director of the National Association of Principals and Deputy Principals. Paul, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So you're looking ahead to reopening, hopefully, says every parent listening, on the 6th. How's it looking at this stage, or what precautions are you taking?
Well, I suppose, first of all, every school will open if it's safe to do so. And that decision will be made locally by the Board of Management of that school. And they will endeavour to communicate that decision as early as possible to parents. So every principal will be on the Met Aaron site over the weekend, hitting the refresh button regularly to see what the status warning will be. They will also be potentially logging into the cameras in their school remotely to see what the environment around the school is like, if there is an accumulation of snow. And they will be trying to just communicate with the Board of Management and with staff and parents as early as possible if a decision has to be made around the school closure.
All right. People of a certain age would remember that maybe a status red warning wasn't the only thing that was required to shut schools. The breakdown of a heating system was enough to close it. Is that still the case?
Well, that would still be the case, or a cut in electricity. So it's important. Schools, the Department of Education have given schools excellent guidance and information about being winter ready. And most schools will have a plan in place, and the plan would involve, obviously, they've got in the salt and bits and pieces like that, but they would have a procedure in place where somebody living locally would go in, usually the caretaker would go in advance just to make sure that the building and environment of the school is safe, the heating is working, the electricity is working, and that it's safe to bring people in to the school building. And then secondary to that, they will look at, is it safe to get people from their homes to the school, be that staff, be that students, bearing in mind that a lot of schools in rural areas particularly will have school transport, and if the school transport make a decision that they will not be travelling the roads and collecting students, well then that kind of forces the hand of the school around a potential school closure. Right. But they need to make sure that it's safe for everybody to get to and from school.
And is there, I mean, there's probably people who are studying for their mocks at the moment, hoping against all hope, of course, that they can return to school. But if they can't, are most schools equipped to offer some level of remote support to people if their school is closed for a few days?
Well, particularly at post-primary, they would be. Post-pandemic, one of the positives, and there's many negatives, but one of the positives of post-pandemic is that the majority of schools are remote learning ready. There's each post-primary student in particular would have a school-based email. A lot of them would have a device, school-owned device or a school-based device. If they haven't, they generally have some sort of a laptop or tablet. And teachers are well-versed via their platform or network. Okay. To communicate with students. So that would be the first option if the school does have to close.
Okay, Paul Crone, Director of the National Association of Principals and Deputy Principals, thanks for rounding that off for us now. Coming up, we'll hear why the rollout of free HRT has been delayed. That's next.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.